Let's Talk Outdoors is recorded on the homelands of many nations, including the Cree, Soto, Assiniboine, Dene, Dakota, Lakota, Nakota, and Métis nations on the Treaty 6 and Treaty 4 territories. We encourage you to always learn more about the stories of the land on which you live, work, and play.
I'm Leah.
And I'm Mike, and this is Let's Talk Outdoors. Today, our guest is Saskatoon climate educator, Ben Okin. Ben has been teaching climate education for 11 years and is the climate action educator with Sask Outdoors.
Listen in to learn what makes an effective climate education program and some resources to get you started.
Hello, Ben Okin. Thanks for joining us today.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Ben, can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and what got you interested in climate education?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm an educator in the city. When I was in university, it was called physical geography. Environmental science wasn't really officially offered at the university. So I took courses in that, and I've really found my initial interest in weather patterns and the environment. Through that, growing up, I had a lot of experience outside. My dad was a quote unquote outdoorsman, taking me on canoe trips and fishing and hiking and camping as much as we could. So my first love of the outdoors and the environment came from there. And then as I progressed through university, taking courses, learning about the climate and that we're in danger, I just really tried to pursue that interest as much as possible. Eventually, I went into education, became an educator, where I've been teaching for about 11 years. Still had the knack for progressing my learning about the environment, so I decided to take a master's in educational foundations with a focus on climate change education. And for the last year and a bit, I've been, along with teaching at a nature-based program, I've been working with Sask Outdoors as the climate action educator.
Really nice.
Great. Sounds like you're coming with lots of background information, which we, of course, already knew. Yeah. Before we go much further, can you explain what climate change education is?
For sure. So climate change education is, it really goes across a lot of subject areas because, as you know, climate change in the heart has a lot of different webs. It spirals through social studies, science, math. There's pretty much every type of learning involved in it. So climate change education is just simply learning about the climate, learning about the factors that are driving climate change, exploring possible fixes, and exploring the political ramifications of climate change. Who are all the people benefiting? Who are causing it the most? Who are most responsible? And who are, and what is our responsibility as citizens to help progress our climate action?
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I feel like quite a few educators are leery about jumping into climate education specifically. Have you seen that in your own work, and kind of what would you say?
Yeah, I would say like certain aspects of climate education definitely push some boundaries, but climate education doesn't have to always be about burning down the house and flipping tables and all that stuff. Like climate change education can be as simply as taking your students out to a park and just exploring the senses, exploring what's out there, getting to know nature a little bit better. Eventually, when we get down to the end of, that's kind of the progression climate change education takes. When students become more aware, they are heated and they are propelled to take action. But I mean, climate change education is as simple as going for a walk with your students.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard some of your presentations, so I know that you have some critical components of climate education that you cover. You don't need to, I know there's a bunch of them, you don't need to list them all, but can you walk us through a few of them?
Yeah, for sure. So there's a really nice kind of a scaffolded sequence of climate change education that I like to follow, where students typically at a younger age will fall in love with nature, explore nature, answer curiosities. And then from that, they'll find out ways that we can make a positive influence. So a lot of that is like classroom planting or creating a classroom garden or like plant identification and things like that. And then from there, we kind of learn about the carbon cycle and the science of climate change and why that's happening. And then kind of from there, we progress to the political side and the social activism and the social justice aspect of climate change. We talk about climate racism and issues like that. So that's kind of the general.
Yeah. Well, I think it's neat too, that adults can have a very similar learning experience with that too, of those critical components you just outlined there. Yeah, and I've seen it like in university classes. I've seen, I guess they're not kids, but young adults get out into the world and they go through that first thing that you were just, that first step of just kind of falling in love with nature. And they're just doing that in slow, they've come to it a little bit later in life, but it's still that same path they can go on.
What are some of the benefits of a climate education for kids?
I think the biggest benefit of climate education for kids is I see it as a huge problem in adults where we're seeing winters like this and we're breaking record after record, right? There's the old saying of this is the hottest year on record until next year. And so we're seeing all these impacts and we're scared about it, but we don't understand why. And when we don't understand why, we go to answers that are easily presented in the media, which aren't necessarily the most concise and most honest answers. And so a lot of times we're looking for these answers and sources that aren't 100% credible. And so building that backbone and building that understanding and the foundation of why is the earth getting hotter? Why are we seeing less precipitation? Why are we seeing heavier stints of precipitations in smaller short sprints, like the mass flooding and things like that? And so to understand that, I think, is just absolutely crucial, because it's going to be here. We're living with it right now. And I think that understanding is the most critical part to have for our students.
Why do you think it's so important that there's climate education in a place like Saskatchewan?
Oh, I think when you look at the prairies, we're one of the most endangered natural ecosystems on the planet. There is a lot of carbon sequestration that happens within our wetlands. A lot of carbon is stored in the prairies. And when we look at how little prairies we have left, it's a real concern and it's a real issue. And I think students who are living in this and are seeing the projects planned out to expand the prairies and to expand mining and to expand harvesting of peat moss lands and things like that, I think that's where we have to act. And I think that's where you have to start, right? A big part of climate change education in general is getting kids acquainted to their local habitat, right? It's easier to understand one habitat and one ecosystem and one weather pattern or one weather system than it is an entire global, system. So
absolutely. Yeah. I feel like there's such an opportunity in Saskatchewan too, with all the resource, like the natural resources we have with solar and wind, and just the potential here is super exciting. I always find that is a neat avenue to always touch on with Saskatchewan, because we're a huge part of the problem, but the opportunities here are really cool to fix it too.
Yeah, it's a little bit head scratching that the province with the most wind and the most annual sunlight and the most potential to do that is by far and wide the worst polluter per capita in the country. So it's like, we have the potential to be a huge leader in this, and there is huge amounts of economic growth that become from this, but because of our ideologies and certain pathways that we're just refusing and not open to making these changes. And so, climate education.
I was going to say, you probably get to see that excitement in kids though, and your excitement through kids too, for what the potential could be for the future. Yeah.
Some of this stuff I can be a little bit of a downer or a little bit depressing or bring up a lot of emotions for people. Can you talk a bit about how you deal with that for yourself and then how you help students move through some of those emotions?
Right. So yeah, climate doomism is the new hot term, and it's climate anxiety. And you get it when you look at predictions and you look at the the most current reports that come out, it's daunting and it's a lot and it's devastating to hear. And especially when you observe how slowly things like this progress at the decision-making level, at the government level, not to mention when you have governments who are less than enthused to make these changes, it can become super overwhelming. And that's why I think it's just so important to mix in hopes of optimism, to bring back that original connection that you have from that past. If it's walking in a forest, if it's even just take deep breath outside, right? You really have to be observant of your students. You're going to see those anxieties. You're going to see the heads pondering when you show stats, when you show certain statistics. You're going to see the jaw drop and the holy cow face. And so as a teacher, it's your responsibility to mix in those messages of hope, mix in those technological breakthroughs, mix in examples of people who are doing really great things in this province. There's a lot of great optimistic things happening in the province in terms of prairie rehabilitation and sustainability. And I just think it's really mixing in, yes, this is serious. Yes, here are the ramifications, here's the projections, but here are people and here is positive things. And here are some really stories of success that are helping make this not inevitable.
Mm-hmm. I know you mentioned earlier, it can be kind of tough to navigate the whole crazy media thing, but where do you find it that you can find resources for teaching about climate education or just about climate change itself?
Well, one of the great resources for activities that you can help to empower your students is EcoSchools Canada. We have a partnership with them. And so they have about 70 totally ready to use activities and projects that your classroom can do to do some climate change education work, to work around sustainability. A lot of it revolves around like school projects and bringing in community. So it might be like reducing idling or looking at your building's footprint and changing that and things like that. And so those are little actions that go a long way in terms of that empowerment and bringing hope when students are feeling like they are part of the change. That's a really great thing. So they have that resilience and they have that strength and they have that knowledge to really tackle those heavy lessons and to tackle those heavy statistics and to really say, okay, when we work together, we can accomplish things. Why can't we do this on a bigger scale, right? So we managed to get rid of all the food waste in our school. Why can't we look at our city? Why can't we reduce let's look at our city composting programs. Let's look, how can we make this bigger, right? And so those little small matches, they start making a big fire over time.
And how key is it to show kids that they can do things like that with those campaigns? And yeah, just to get that that positive reinforcement that they can have these kind of changes too.
Mm-hmm. And once they start reaching out and branching out and reaching out to community, it's amazing how fast students can really create bigger momentums. I mean, you and I know this all too well with our students. There's over like 5,000 people at that that rally that our students are really cool. huge part of. And so those it's things like that that really make this kind of education worthwhile, because you see one little lesson transpire into this huge or active community organization and these huge calls on teachers, government, industry to make these changes, right? So yeah.
I think your steps make such sense of it all, because I think, well, you and I both experienced it too. Sometimes you start working with these kids and then eventually you got to get out of their way. It's just like, well, we're not moving fast enough for them, and they want to do other things. And so, yeah, you just got to kind of get them started and then let them go. Mm-hmm.
If it were a person who didn't know much about climate change, the science and the history and the politics and the social implications, what are some resources you would recommend to start with to learn more?
Okay, so pretty quickly in the new year here, we're launching the Scout Out Scout Climate Instagram page. So it's SKOUT Climate. And on that page, I'll be doing a weekly book recommendation. I'll be doing a lot of teachable lessons. I'll also be promoting EcoSchools through that. And that'll be a great place to kind of get your feet wet if you're interested in teaching or just interested as a person to learn more about climate change. One book I would really recommend is The Weathermakers. It's by Tim Flannery. It's about 15 years old now. And so like a lot of their predictions, it's interesting to see. It's a really, really great fundamental book about the science of climate change, what is causing our Earth to heat. And so when you talk about these predictions that are going to happen in like 2015 and 2018, and you're like, well, we kind of we're past that bridge. But just to know the fundamental science of like, why is our climate changing and how are we doing it? The Weather Makers by Tim Flannery is one I would definitely recommend as your first book. And then if you want to get into the political side, anything by Naomi Klein, I highly recommend. This Changes Everything is probably where I would start suggesting that. So if you read This Changes Everything and The Weather Makers together, you'll have a good, great understanding of climate change.
Good pace. Yeah.
Good base for sure. And everything's changing. That's one of the toughest things about climate change education is the better data we get, the more scientific data we gather, the more our predictions change. And there's so many loop cycles and there's so many, feedback loops. And there's so many things that are so interdependent that understanding it as a whole is a really, really tough thing to understand. But if you're understanding the fundamentals of the greenhouse effect and the carbon cycle, that's a good place to start. But I mean, it's never ending. As much as I've learned and as much as I read, I just find out the more and more I have. It's such a big thing to understand.
Yeah, I think there's, like you said, there's so many more resources coming out too. And it, like I think when you first started teaching climate change like 11 years ago about climate change, it was maybe a bit harder to find examples of it that were like impacting Saskatchewan and Canada. But now it's pretty easy to find the impacts online. You know, mm-hmm. You can look up most national newspapers or international and you'll have those sort of things, those stories. But I think the nice part about what you're bringing up is it gives you the, like, it's one thing to go and find the issue, but it's another thing to go find the solutions and help with kids' anxieties and stuff like that through the resources you brought up.
And the more visible, like forest fires are a huge topic this summer, right? We had a horrible, the air was dirty. The smoke was hard. It was hard to breathe a lot of days outside. But then when you talk about the actual carbon that those forest fires emitted mm-hmm. completely, like in total, is it pales in comparison to what our industry released last year, right? Just because that the carbon release from industry isn't as visible and isn't as dirty in the air, right? But when it opens up these great talking points, because like even though it was the world's or the Canada's largest on record amount of CO2 released from forest fires, it wasn't even half of what we released industrially this year.
Right.
Context really matters, and that having that big picture.
For sure.
Looping back to the school setting, how can schools and administrators help support climate education? Mm-hmm.
I think recommending good resources, doing your research. I think the curriculum is your best friend. So before you, if there's something you're passionate, you want to teach about, making sure there's that curriculum link in there right now. Right now, part of my work is with the Eco Schools is going through the Saskatchewan curriculum outcome by outcome and linking them to each specific action. So I know very well that pretty much any education you want to do around climate change, it's backed by the curriculum. So before you teach that lesson that you think might have some pushback, go take a little perusal through the curriculum, find something that backs, and then you can just, when, if those tough questions come or if people are asking, why are you doing this, to say, well, here is the provincial government document that is saying this is what I'm supposed to teach. This is what I'm teaching. This is how it relates. And there's not really that big of an argument that you can have against that. And so I think in general, if you're knowledgeable and you do the extra little bit of research before you teach those subjects and make parents aware, make your administrators aware of what you're teaching, I think they'll have your back for it. And I think public perception is changing rapidly because it is undeniable. We are in a snowless January with granted, like weather patterns don't really affect the overall climate, but there is a trend that we will see definitely. So that's pretty much what I have to say about that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We've kind of chatted about like classrooms and teachers and stuff like that and how what they can do. But what do you think about people who aren't in a classroom, but are kind of still in educational roles?
For sure. I think recommending it into just bringing up those conversations, the best thing we can do is talk about it. Even those conversations, it's just like, oh, it's crazy weather we're having, right? Weather is something that comes up in normal conversations. And I think if we're more open to talking about a little bit of a tougher situation and we know those things, is like, well, actually, yeah, like we can, let's talk about this. Like, why is this winter so unique in comparison to the last winters, right? You can talk about El Nino, and you can talk about those processes, but we can talk about more is the heating, and we can talk about more of like the averages and why those are happening, right? And so through those conversations, I think we just become more informed citizens. And with that, we have the power to advocate for the changes and the choices that would benefit our future. I'm sorry, is that kind of what you were hoping for in the
answer? I think it's spot on. I mean, but, Leah, you're someone that doesn't teach in a regular school setting. But I know you're pretty, you understand a lot of things about climate change. But yeah, I don't know, for kind of getting people involved in this sort of work, even if you're like running a daycare or you want to do things with your kids, and maybe both of you, like, is there things that you guys would do how do you teach education? You do that?
For sure. You can go out there and investigate signs of climate change everywhere, right? You can look at plants, you can look at growth, you can look at leaf health, right? And so I'm really interested this spring to see how our plants are fruiting, how are plants leaving, right? Because without that, granted, there's still 3 or 4 months of winter left, and without that snow cover, right? That snow cover is so essential for plants to remain dormant, right? And so if our ground is thawing and refreezing and thawing and refreezing, right, we have a lot of plant systems that are really reliant on being frozen solid 1 or 2 feet deep to go completely dormant. And when those plants are using those energy throughout the winter, I'm really curious. I'm pessimistically curious about how plants will be able to flower and produce in the spring. So, and just looking for that evidence everywhere, right? So taking kids out and be like, hey, what is the big difference between today and this day last year? Right. And if you can find pictures on the line of like January 8th, 2020 or whatever year you want.
My phone's constantly
reminding. What's similar? What's different? Look at the temperatures. Look at this, and you can look at those temperature graphs, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, my phone's always popping up like this day last year, and I was cross country skiing like 3 weeks ago last year. You know, it's popping up.
Yeah, I take my students every year to the Chappelle Marsh, and I happen to have a picture of the same like area of bushes that we were working at from about 4 years ago. And I said, look at this picture of this area 4 years ago, where there is still water in the marsh. There was still like, oh, there was green everywhere. The berries were abundant and everywhere. And I looked at the one, it was roughly in the same week. There's a typical routine schedule that you go through with different excursions, as you know, and just seeing that difference, even 4 years of not having that precipitation that the area is used to has on that area, it was mind blowing for the students.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
I got my kids a game called Solutions from the Outdoor Learning Store. We haven't played it yet, so I can't give any reviews. But to be honest, they looked at it and they're like, "This is a Sasko Doors thing." They like tossed it aside. So someday we will get around to playing it. But I believe that it's about
your kids are familiar with that stuff.
Yeah. About solutions around climate education.
Can you tell us a little bit more, Ben, about the Eco Schools platform and why teachers might want to get involved with it?
Yeah, Eco Schools is a great place to get started. The action cards themselves are really well organized, and there's a lot of my favorite part about them is that they're, with every action card, there's like a suggestion on how to further your learning, right? So an action card, for an example, might be, create a classroom compost, right? And so when you do that activity and that's great. If you want to stop there, that's totally great. But they have this like additional resources or how to continue your learning. And so from there, you can go and look at, oh, how does our city take care of its food waste? And from there, you can really start making these awesome inquiry projects with your classroom. But the way the program works is as a school or as a classroom or as like an environmental club, if you have that at your school, what you do is there's a library of action cards. And so you select ones that are maybe in line with what you're teaching in the classroom or ones that are in line with what your curriculum is and, or in line with what you kind of want to teach in general. You select those. And then once you complete those tasks, you get a certain amount of points. So depending on how big the action card is how many points you get for your school. And through those points, you get certification. So you can work towards your school becoming a certified eco school. And there's like bronze, platinum, gold levels. And so at the end of each year, we get a certification celebration where schools who have certified and have accomplished these things, they all meet on this big online webinar, and there's guest speakers and there's prizes and things like that. And we all celebrate all the great climate work that we've done over the year.
Well, that's really neat. I've got to get more, you know, I do this sort of stuff, but I haven't used that stuff yet. So I'm going to be logging onto that.
Yeah. And if you go, so the website is ecoschools.ca and you go in there and there's, once you sign up for an account, you just got to all the schools are already pre-registered. If you are in a private school or early childhood education, we can hook you up as well. You just have to, contact us and you say, hey, I'm from this private school. My school's not listed, and we'll get you an account right away. There's really no commitment from the get-go. You can just kind of go open it up, look through the library and look through all the actions and see if anything, catches your eyes, any of those actions. I think there's rough 70 to 80 right now you can choose through. And so, and when there's always more being added on, and hopefully by the spring, all of the Saskatchewan curriculum links will be directly into every task card.
Yeah. The theme of the season of our podcast is connection to place. And I know you talked about that back at the beginning of our conversation as one of the first steps in climate education. Can you share with us what being connected to place means for you and one place that you feel connected to?
Absolutely. There's numerous places that I feel connected to. I'm so fortunate and I'm so grateful to both live and work a stone's throw away from the river. So the New Austin Valley and the riverbank and all of the plants and people and animals that we see there are just so special to me. I woke up this morning and I let my dog out into the backyard, and there's a family of deer that were just outside of my fence, and they come and they like to chew on the apple trees. And in the summer, I'll take a lot of my apples and I'll put them in a pile outside the fence, and they all come in there and like listening to the coyotes every night. And I think that's really the foundation. Like every student that I've talked to who has been engaged in this climate activism and engaged in climate, they all have that connection to the land, right? They see and they experience land in a way that is personal, in a way that is spiritual for many. And I think that is really the foundational piece of climate work, because it is hard work, it is difficult work, it is challenging, but just having that connection and just understanding the importance and the significance of the work you're doing is really what drives you, I would say. So I would say, yeah, the riverbank is my favorite place in the city, but then there's places all over Saskatchewan that I really feel at home in, and I love to explore. So
that's a great answer. Is there anything that we did that you wanted us to ask, but we didn't ask, or any additional last thoughts?
No, I would just suggest read the Weathermakers. If climate change is something that is scary and you have no grasp of, and it's this big looming blob in the sky that you have no idea what's happening, I would just really, really read the Weathermakers. Check out the Instagram page, check out Sask Outdoors website. And if you're an educator, check out Eco Schools, because it is a great way to get your feet wet with literally little to no prep on your end. The action cards are day one, do this, day two, do this. Here is the form to collect the data that you need. Here is the video that you can show to introduce this idea, right? And then there's also all of those links to getting educated yourself, like along with the lessons itself. There is links to resources for background knowledge as well as regionally some organizations that can come present to your class or help you out with your work as well.
Yeah, I think that's a big part. It's getting other people to help out. I think like I've been doing it for a while, and I just finally had somebody join me on a trip last year who's older and wiser than me. And like, what a benefit. I've never had that before my whole teaching career. It's just like, well, I just was able to soak up so much more and enjoy the experience so much more just having that knowledge there. And so, yeah, I think reach out to people. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say a good 80% of those foundational lessons that I teach have just been totally grifted off someone who I was on a learning experience with. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This is important. I'm going to steal it. And you know what? And they're always so happy for someone to use it. Like, I know if I took an intern this year, and I would just feel so happy and honored that anything I was teaching, she was teaching in her classroom, right? And so I think it's keeping that openness. And when there's good ideas and there's good actions to be done and there's good things you can do with your class, or there's good learning and good opportunities, I think it needs to be shared openly. And I think most educators are okay with that and open to it. So
that's just good teaching there, Ben.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Ben, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate you spending the time with us.
Yeah, this is great. I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me. It's been an honor and a pleasure. And I hope, I hope people can take something from it.
Mike, are there any actions you're going to take after listening to Ben's interview?
Yeah, I'm going to get more involved with the eco schools, I think, and start participating in that. I like it when lessons are outlined for me, and it sounds like this is a really good way to help me maybe take on some lessons that I haven't done before and get the kids with a more structured lesson, which I always need help with in my teaching. How about with you, Leah?
I really liked Ben's messages around empowerment and hope. And I think those are things that I want to incorporate into my life and my communication around climate education. And I was also quite interested in the Weather Makers book. It's not one that I've read, and it sounds like it might be an interesting read, given it was written 15 years ago with predictions of things that have now passed. So I think that is another action I might take.
This podcast is produced in association with Sask Outdoors. Check us out online at saskoutdoors.org.